Listen to shoot the defence. It's unbelievable, Jeff.
Hello, welcome to Shoot the Defence on FNX and Happy New Year. It's our first show of the year and what a show to get started. Joining me this evening, or should I say this morning because it's 12:30, is not one but both hosts of the superb Low Limit Football podcast on the Beyond the Pitch Network. It's Joe Ucello and Roberto Rojas. Gentlemen, welcome to the show again. How are you guys doing?
Rob, you first.
Yeah, not bad, guys. Happy New Year, and let's hope that this year is a spectacular one for all three of us. You know, we definitely have a lot to talk about today, but certainly in this interesting year that we're going to have in the world of football, can't wait to get started and can't wait to get the ball rolling here.
Yeah, you know, Happy New Year to everybody listening. And as Rob said, very excited to get 2019 started on the show. We're entering in the middle of our fifth year of broadcasting, and we've got a great year planned out. Rob and I have been talking. We've been on break for a couple weeks, but we've been talking on the side about some projects that we've got going on. We're going to try to do a couple things a little different this year, very excited for the upcoming year, and just over the moon to be able to join you tonight, Stahl, because you know Rob and I are both big fans. And consider you a good friend, so to be able to join you on the show tonight is great for us.
Oh, thank you, mate. Feeling is mutual. I can tell you this for now. It's an absolute pleasure having you guys on. It's always a pleasure being on your show as well. So long may it continue, gents.
Thank you.
Definitely, thank you.
Great stuff. Well, before we start, how was your Christmas and New Year? You guys get up to some right mischief, don't you?
Well, Rob's, I would say, up until Christmas Eve was a little warmer than mine. Family came up, came into town, stayed with us for a week. Got to spend some good quality time with my mother and father and my brother and my sister-in-law and my nephews. And you know, like I said, you know, my buddy came up from Charlotte with his wife, who's currently doing her residency in Atlanta. So we got to see her, and my girls are always excited to see her. So, you know, it was a great holiday. And I wish I'd taken more time off because I would have liked to have watched a little more football with a few minutes off here and there, but still, you know, a good restful time and now time to get back to the grind.
Great stuff. And great you, stuff. Rob?
Yeah, no, Joe's kind of a bit warmer than both of you guys are in, so I went to Paraguay once to go visit some family, friends, and enjoy myself. So I always do every year. No, it's always good to go. I have all my family in Paraguay. There 9:35 degree for you, and in English terms, it's pretty. But yeah, this is it was really enjoyed it. Well, glad to be back. Always good to be home, but it's always good to have a break whenever I have possible.
Right, gents, let's talk about the big game that occurred tonight: Man City 2, Liverpool 1. And that's the only place to really begin the show. City slapped the one hand that Liverpool had on the title with a 2-1 win, which cuts Liverpool's lead at the top to 4 points. Leroy Sané's goal 18 minutes from time proved to be the winner at stage in the game where City appeared to be running on empty. Joe, so many talking points to go over, mate, but I'd like to know your overall opinion on the game.
Well, the game was incredibly exciting. It was end-to-end. I don't want to basically say that there was a dominant team for me. I thought both teams had their chances. I believe it was Emerick Laporte who, by an inch, saved City's 3 points, you would say, off the line with a fantastic play. Almost made a howler of it with Ederson, kind of going back to the ball and almost clearing it into his face. It was kind of a comical scene there in the first half a bit, but really a tide-changing point in the match for me where it allowed City to kind of stabilize themselves. Up until that point, City really hadn't had much going forward. They were possessing, but not a shot on goal. I think it was the 28th minute when they first had their first shot on goal. You look at Aguero's goal as well, fantastic finish, being able to bring the ball down and with such a tight angle, shoot it over Alisson's right shoulder into the roof of the net. Was a fantastic finish there. David Silva would wish that he had one back, I think, as well in this match. But I thought it was a very exciting match between certainly visibly two of the top teams in the Premier League right now.
Absolutely, man. Rob, City took the lead with a stunning goal from Aguero. It was an absolutely incredible finish from what looked like an impossible angle. But we shouldn't really be surprised. He's a complete striker, isn't he?
Yeah, definitely. And I think he's always earned that reputation as becoming, you know, I think people have always been doubting him because of a player that perhaps isn't consistently doing well. You know, he's always been known for being kind of injury prone, but time and time again, every time we doubt him, he's always be considered, you know, I think right now the best striker in the Premier League. Yes, there's going to be debates with him, with Harry Kane, with obviously Firmino, who obviously scored as well, but you look at the debate that they have with Lukaku and then many other players in the Premier League. I think Sergio Aguero is just a tier above everyone else, and that goal today against Liverpool just proves the quintessential player, how great he's been so far over the last now 8 years in the Premier League.
Absolutely. And Joe, Liverpool were unfortunate not to take the lead when Stones cleared the ball off the line. Had it been 1.12 centimetre more over the line, it would have been a different game. Fine margins, as they say.
Yeah, you know, it's probably the difference of us between talking about a title race up for grabs and Liverpool firmly gripping that that EPL title. It's literally, the, like you said, a centimetre, and it's a different story. But it was a fantastic play off the back line there, where you really thought that, and if I remember correctly, that moment happened when it was still 0-0. And it could have really changed the momentum of the match, because Liverpool, like we'd said, Liverpool had the better of the chances at that point. City had not had a shot on goal as of yet. But it changes the momentum of the match. And then, like we said, with the Aguero finish, it was something spectacular. The one thing I noticed in the second half as well, as Liverpool were starting to push forward, they were trying to press the issue. The speed of Raheem Sterling coming up the wing, we almost saw a second goal for Sergio Aguero if it were not for a huge play by Alisson to stop him as Sergio went to cut around Alisson Becker to finish into an empty net. I thought Sterling really started to provide that extra momentum, especially in the second half for City, and force their will on them and really keep Liverpool at bay, where they wanted to get Van Dijk a little further forward. Obviously, big body on set plays. They want to get him in there. That's where he normally, you know, does his best work. And they couldn't get him that far forward because of the threat coming back the other way. For me, when you looked at this match before the match started, there was a big everyone was comparing, you know, whose defense was better, whose midfield was better. And I think what we saw today was the midfield of City is better, but they really missed De Bruyne making those intelligent, lethal passes throughout the midfield. I think that was the finishing touch that City would have needed if they hadn't gotten the win. I think I would have pointed to that as one of the big issues and something that they really need to get De Bruyne, their talisman, back onto the pitch soon.
Yeah, see, the thing is, I was a bit confused when De Bruyne was named on the bench. But having said that, Liverpool play with such a high intensity, so much energy in the middle of the park. I think Guardiola knows that De Bruyne isn't fully fit. He isn't on top of his game at the moment. And putting him in the middle of the park against that midfield trio that Liverpool have would have ruined him.
Yeah, I think what Pep was thinking was that with the pace that they provide, a solid defensive player like Fernandinho was a better choice for them in the middle, because City want to play so far forward and want to kind of possess the ball in the middle third and into the opponent's third. And I think the idea was that Fernandinho allowed them that solid defense back, moving back, so that you could prevent any quick Liverpool counterattack.
That's right. And I also think that the reason why he picked that midfield trio with Pep, because De Bruyne will play further forward, whereas Silva can drop deep along with Bernardo Silva, and they can dictate the tempo. They know full well that Liverpool, again, play with such high intensity, they close players down, and someone like De Bruyne needs time on the ball, you know, whereas Silva and the other Silva, they can take a couple of touches before releasing it, whereas, you know, De Bruyne is always looking for that crucial pass. And I think that's why Pep went for that midfield trio. But, you know, Roberto, Klopp chose to go with Henderson, Wijnaldum and Milner to stifle the two Silvers and Fernandinho. Now, dropping an informed Fabinho to the bench came back to bite him on the arse, didn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Sorry. Yeah, no, I mean, it was definitely very interesting to see that type of team that Liverpool put up. Obviously, you look at the midfield with Milner, Henderson, Wijnaldum. You look at the top, like Mane, Firmino, Salah. You look at the intensity that they bring up forward. You know, as Joe said, it was a battle about, you know, there was the debate of which midfield was better, which defense was better, which goalkeeper was better in this case. But it still proved to be a classic encounter. But unfortunately, I think that when you compare it to both the teams, you look at Pep Guardiola, you know, looking at that midfield as one of the key things, I think, because of players like Bernardo Silva, like Fernandinho, Aguero being there at the right time, Sané having a fantastic game. I think he was the best player on the pitch for me, having seen that game. So I think in the end, Guardiola, you know, he was able to get his tactics right. He was able to, you know, be better than Klopp in this game as well. But it was so close to say that, you know, it's still going to be a big title race now. Because if we look at this game, people were saying that people were really going to win this game, that the season was over, people could finally win the title in a long, long time. But now Manchester City come in, and now things get really, really interesting. Not for these two teams as well, but the teams that are below them, Spurs, Chelsea, Arsenal, those teams, they're the ones now that are going to be most content with this result.
That's right, mate. And, you know, the result has no doubt blown the title race wide open. Where do you both see the title going now? Have you guys changed your opinions?
I'll jump in first. No, I predicted Liverpool at the beginning of the season to win the title. I you know, we talked about it in the show, and I was doing a little homework on the show before we came on the air tonight, because I wanted to see what's left in front of these two teams, because I think we all agree that these are going to be the two teams fighting it out. You know, Spurs might make – we can talk about Spurs in a minute. We can talk about Chelsea. We can talk about Arsenal. But I think for the most part, many would believe that it's going to be either City or Liverpool in this one. When you look at Liverpool's schedule moving forward, of the top six teams in the league, obviously them being one of them, so the five other teams that they face, they only have Man United away, and then they have Spurs at home on the 30th of March, and then Chelsea at home on the 13th of April. In between there, if they advance past Bayern Munich, which they'll face Bayern Munich right before the Man U match, which is on the road, they'll make it to the quarterfinals, and they'll play that quarterfinal match, that first leg, just before the Chelsea match at home. So the schedule on paper is a little lighter, especially with the home matches that they have available to them. When you look at City, the only team City has played twice in the top six is Liverpool. This was their second match. They still have Arsenal on February 3rd, Chelsea on the 10th. They have the Manchester Derby on the 16th. They have Spurs on the 20th. They have Schalke in between there in their Champions League run. And then obviously quarterfinals would be somewhere around April 9th as well. So I think City have the tougher path, but I also think City is the deeper team. And I think is probably best built to handle the rigors of multiple competitions. But again, when you look at it, it's still 4 points, and it is 4 points that have to be made up within two games. Liverpool have to drop points here somewhere. And I don't know that they're going to be doing that, especially with Spurs later in the season. And we'll talk about them in a minute, or at least my thoughts on them in a minute. And then Chelsea later in the season as well, where they will be two tired teams also battling multiple fronts. And I think they'll be ripe for the taking for Liverpool. So I don't see Liverpool dropping very many points in the Premier League moving forward.
Very bold statement there, mate. Very bold. Rob?
Yeah, I have to agree. I think that I also predicted Liverpool to win the Premier League at the start of the season. When you look at the two schedules comparing both the teams, you kind of do have to admit that, you know, Liverpool do have that lighter schedule. And obviously, tying into all the other games that are happening there, you know, you look at your FA Cup, you look at Champions League as well. I just think that the advantage for Liverpool right here, you know, we kind of have been accustomed to seeing the games in the Premier League, how, you know, the big teams kind of drop points to the lesser teams. Like we saw a couple days ago with, Chelsea. So it's certainly going to be very interesting about these two teams. If they can maintain their form with Liverpool, I think that, you know, this loss is something that they shouldn't be too, well, I think, All that being said, that it does make the race much tighter, but you know they still only lost one game this entire season out of 21 games so far. So I think Liverpool are going to be more motivated now heading into the next few games of the season, that they need to, you know, get these points. Hope that, of course, that the other teams below them, like City, like Spurs, Chelsea, Arsenal, drop points that could only just gain their gap between all the other teams. So I think I'm going to have to agree with Joe here as well. I think Liverpool are the team to beat. I think this title is theirs to lose as well. And you know, does this slip up? I don't think so this time.
You can't say that. You're gonna upset a lot of Liverpool fans. You can't bring up that season. Well, gents, Liverpool's defeat also means that Spurs have thrown their hat back in the ring following their 3-0 victory at Cardiff on New Year's Day. Goals from Kane, Eriksen and Son killed the game off in under half an hour to put Spurs 6 points behind Liverpool. Now, Joe, many believe the home defeat against Wolves all but ended Tottenham's title chances, but they're not giving up just yet, are they?
They're not, you know, and they're still playing pretty good football. You look at the way this team plays, they have plenty of firepower. I think, and listening to some other pundits, I think I agree with them as well. You look back at one of the biggest arguments of us when we previewed Tottenham Hotspur going into the season was that they spent no money in the transfer window. Now, we've got a new transfer window wide open here for us, but I don't see Spurs going out and getting or adding big players or even significant depth that would allow them to battle on multiple fronts. And you've got to remember, Champions League, FA Cup, EPL, they're still in the mix. So my worry is that they don't have enough going forward to be able to battle on all fronts. And I think a team like Spurs is probably going to have to pick and choose where they want to rest their money so that they can at least try to bring home a trophy. I think that's something that people will look at Pochettino eventually and say, hey, you know, we've got to return something here. We've got a very good team. We're always competing. We're always in the top six. We're always moving into the knockout stages of the Champions League, but we have no silverware to show for it. Where is that silverware? So I think Pochettino's probably going to have to look at this, and Spurs top brass going to have to look at this window and say, are we going to add a piece? Are we going to add some depth to be able to compete on multiple fronts? Or are we going to put all our eggs in a particular basket, the EPL basket, the FA Cup basket, or the Champions League basket, and see if we can go and win that competition with the depth that we have and then regroup in the summer window?
Well, Joe, I know Son is heading to the Asia Cup for Norway with his Korean national team. I think he may miss about 7 games if they get to the final. He's been an absolutely fantastic player for Spurs this season, hasn't he?
He has, but you talk about the rigors of the amount of football he's played in the World Cup, had to play, I believe, Asian games right in August. He missed the first few weeks of the season because he was playing off with South Korea, where he avoided military service, if you remember correctly. Now he comes into the EPL and he's playing on these other fronts as well. Heung-min Son has not had a lot of downtime in the past, I would say, 18 months. And you start to wonder when that's going to wear on him. He's been quite durable, so you'd hope that would continue. But you have to start to rest him. You really have to start to conserve him a little bit moving forward, because he's not going to be able to last a full 2 years of playing football week in and week out.
Oh, I agree with you, mate. I agree. Rob, it isn't just the title race that got people talking. The final Champions League place is very much up for grabs, as Chelsea were held at home against Southampton, while Arsenal and United won quite convincingly. What do you make of this three-team battle, mate?
I think it's great. I think that, you know, with all the perhaps the drama happening at the top, I think the biggest one is obviously happening for these last Champions League spots. I still think that when you look at the teams, you look at City, Spurs, Chelsea, Arsenal, I think those are the teams that I think are secured of a Champions League spot. We have to see what Manchester United have to do, obviously, heading into their type of games, under their new manager. So I think it's been an interesting race so far. I think that it was kind of expected at the start of the season. You look at teams like Leicester and Watford, even Wolves, you know, putting their hat in the ring and try to, you know, cause a shock there. But I think it's kind of the norm as of lately, you know, looking at these teams like Chelsea, Arsenal, United, Spurs, you know, they're fighting it for those Champions League spots. So it's been quite interesting. I think that, you know, it's all going to matter about these games where they can't drop points against the smaller teams, that they need to beat the big teams ahead of them in their own, you know, their own top five realm. So that's something that I think is going to be very interesting to look forward to. But yeah, I think when it comes to the teams I just mentioned, I think those are the ones that are going to be secured of European spots. The battle between who goes in the Champions League or Europa League, however, that's going to be completely wide open to whoever at this point.
So what do you both make about the demise of Jose Mourinho? I haven't really spoken to you guys about it, really. And the resurgence of United under Solskjaer. Is this the turning point for United season?
I'll go first. I think it is, because you look at how well Solskjaer has been doing so far with this United team. You look at how rejuvenated a player like Paul Pogba has been so far. I believe that he was one of those players that was harshly criticized by many people because of the way that he was playing under Mourinho. He's really rejuvenated into that top player that we know he is. that perhaps we weren't able to see earlier in the season, but we know of the capability that he's having. But you look at players like Marcus Rashford, you look at players like Lukaku, you know, being wonderful as well. So it's been kind of a breath of fresh air, I think, for Manchester United to go on this really good streak under Solskjaer. So I think that it's something that's going to be really interesting heading into the end of the season if United are looking to keep with Solskjaer, because you have to remember, they still have not just the I would say that not the Premier League race is over, but I think you still have the FA Cup. You still have the EFL Cup. You still have the Champions League, mind you. You know, they do have a good tie against PSG, where, if you remember, I think when the draw was announced, when they still had Mourinho, you know, many people were still thinking that this was probably PSG's chance to get this, you know, result and to advance. But now, under Solskjaer, because of the way that they're playing so far, that tie is becoming much more closer than ever before. So, yeah, it's been going good so far for Manchester United. I mean, Joe, this has certainly been a rejuvenation heading into the new year.
Yeah, you know, I want to ask all the United fans what they think of Paul Pogba now. That's the big thing. As a Juventus fan, I knew what Paul Pogba was, and you could see it. You could see it even based on what we saw in the World Cup, that Pogba wasn't being utilized the way many coaches in the past have utilized him and have maximized him. He is one of the top talents in the world. I mean, that goes without saying. We've seen it time and time again. I think Mourinho, in the end, was probably a little too rigid in his tactics and what he wanted to do. And I think he was trying to make square pegs fit in round holes, especially in the case of Paul Pogba. And now that Solskjaer comes in and changes formations a little bit, kind of changes the air, really, opens the windows and lets the air out. I think you're seeing a freer Manchester United, a freer flowing Manchester United, and it's turned into, you know, a great result against Newcastle on the weekend. I think Paul Pogba, since the coaching change, has scored 3 goals and 3 assists in 2 matches, which tops what he had already completed or accomplished this season. So, you know, the rumors of the talk of Manchester United fans wanting Paul Pogba out, wanting to send him somewhere else, I think have quieted a little bit, because you're starting to get a glimpse of what he can really be. And I think moving forward, I think United may get into the top six here. You know, it's going to be tough with the way Arsenal's playing. But you want to look at what are they going to do in the summer window with who they're going to bring on as a head coach. Are they going to keep Solskjaer as the head coach? Are they going to look to somebody else? Many talk about Conte, which for me at this point would be a bad move, because I think Conte's style in terms of what he wants to do on the pitch is going to be similar to what Mourinho was trying to do. And I think the team might take a step back. So I don't think Conte is a very good fit for this team. You know, I think they would have to look elsewhere. Even somebody like Leonardo Jardim, who has moved on, he wouldn't be such a bad fit here. But he's moved over to China now for the rest of the season. We'll have to see what United does, because I think they're going to have some tough decisions in the summer window.
Oh, absolutely. I can't agree with you more, mate. But the only problem that we've had with Pogba, I'd say, is attitude. And, you know, but the thing is, you can say the same about all the other players, because, you know, a lot of them did down tools at the back end of Jose's tenure at United. They weren't playing for the club, they weren't playing for the shirt, and a lot of the fans were getting quite frustrated. And it's normal to, you know, point the finger at the manager, because he's the one in the background, you know, supposed to be motivating the players, supposed to be getting the best out of them, and he clearly wasn't. What annoys me are a lot of modern day football fans that don't really understand how social media works. Paul Pogba is a massive cash cow for Man United. Let's not make any bones about it. You know, it's all about brand Pogba. This is why we saw the very unreal unveiling of Pogba when we signed him. You know, we had the whole Stormzy video, the whole Adidas hoo-ha, and it's something that we're not used to seeing as United fans, because we had it with David Beckham, but it wasn't as in your face. You know, it was mostly the media that were making the most of it. But now, because you got social media, because you've got all these different ways of branding a player, or, you know, putting him out there, you've got Man United's Twitter page, you've got Adidas, you've got all these other fanboys out there constantly promoting the guy, and he's getting a bad reputation based on that. Now, his performances, don't get me wrong, up until recently, haven't been of a £90 million player, and I think that's why a lot of United fans got on his back, especially the old school United fans. That being said, you know, his talent is unquestionable. He's one of the best midfielders in the world, and I just think that under Solskjaer, he's able to play the way he wants, and he's blossoming, isn't he?
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, Me too. You make a great point about the marketing part of this, Stel. A lot of these players, Zlatan Ibrahimovic, Cristiano Ronaldo, Paul Pogba, we've seen it from Griezmann. We've seen it from
Neymar.
Yeah, thank you. Big one. We've seen it from a lot of these higher-end players where they are more than just 2 feet on the pitch. There's a whole marketing realm around it. That goes with it. We look at when Juventus brought on Cristiano Ronaldo this year, their stock rose like 15% on the signing. So, you know, these are the things that are not lost on a lot of these clubs, especially the bigger clubs like United, like a Chelsea. It'll be interesting to see what happens with Eden Hazard, especially in the summer window, because with the pulling from Real Madrid, but obviously Chelsea adding Christian Pulisic, there's marketing that needs to be done here as well. I just think that When you end up with that type of price tag, when you're a player that ends up with a £90 million price tag on your back, there's an expectation of that price tag, and he wasn't doing it. There's a component of it for me, Stel, when I look back on Paul Pogba and what he did under Mourinho, that reminds me a lot of what Eden Hazard did under Antonio Conte last year, and what even Hazard did under Mourinho previously, where you see players, it's soft. It's lackadaisical, and there's no effort. You don't see that fight in them. And then all of a sudden, a coaching change happens, and we see that fight again. And I think that there's some of that. There's some pride that has to fall on the individual player that has to say, "Listen, I have a £90 million price tag on my back, and I need to perform to that level, regardless of who's barking orders on the sideline."
Oh, completely agree with you, mate. Completely agree with you. Well, Joe, I know that Juve is a side, a team that's close to your heart. Aaron Ramsey played the big role in Arsenal's win over Fulham, and he's set to join Juve in the summer on a free transfer. How do you think he'll be deployed in the Allegri system?
I think he's going to be that attacking midfielder. Right now, what we see at Juventus is we see Dybala assuming more of a right wing type position, where we see a front three, and Allegri's been playing a 4-3-3 with Mandzukic on the left, Cristiano Ronaldo as the number nine, and then Dybala on the right. And I know Dybala would like to kind of tuck in behind a little bit more, but he seems to be more comfortable. You almost picture Messi in black and white stripes when you watch Dybala the way he plays, marauding up the right side, cutting in to use his left foot, which is dominant for him. I think Aaron Ramsey brings that transitional piece from Miralem Pjanic, from Sami Khedira, and move that ball forward, controlling it. And I think it becomes a more organized attack under them. The one thing we're not seeing from Juventus is that fine touch in the final third, where we're getting those insightful passing lanes. And I think Aaron Ramsey is the kind of player that can be that final piece. And I got to be honest with you, if they find a way to incorporate him properly and still keep Dybala happy and still keep Douglas Costa happy and Federico Bernardeschi happy and Mandzukic happy, I really think, and of course I'm a little bit of a homer saying this, but I think you're looking at the Champions League champion.
Wow. Bold statement there, mate.
I mean, you look at how they've been playing. Even we look at Juventus, what they've done so far this season. They have not played their best football match yet, which is amazing. They've only dropped 4 points in the Serie A, and this is a Serie A that has a much improved Milan side, a much improved Inter side, a much improved Napoli side, bringing in Carlo Ancelotti and the ability to rotate players. They have not conceded much, and even we saw them lose that match 2-1 to Manchester United in Champions League. At that point, many things were all but decided, and I think that Man United match was probably their worst match of the season, and it was a match that they were still at worst, even with Manchester United. So I really think he's the kind of piece that if they incorporate him properly and if he remains healthy, that could be the final touch to winning that treble this year.
Superb. Well, Rob, another player who used to play for Arsenal is Cesc Fabregas, and it looks like he's heading to Monaco to team up again with Thierry Henry. Now, he follows Brazilian defender Naldo, who recently left Schalke. That came as a bit left field as well, to be honest. It's a great move for Cesc and Naldo, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I think when you're looking at the position that Cesc has been in so far for the Chelsea side, you know, you look at how, you know, they're really relying on that midfield with Jorginho, with Kante, Kovacic as well. I think it was time for Cesc to go. And it's been a long time coming as well. He's obviously been one of the most consistent players in the Premier League, and you know, but unfortunately his time has come, and now he goes to a Monaco side who, you know, have been struggling tremendously. You know, they're still in the relegation zone. You know, there is that fear that they could get relegated to League 2, which is incredible considering the fact that they were just in the Champions League semifinals 2 years ago. So this is a really, really big step, I guess, for the for the team like Monaco, you know, getting Naldo as well. I think Thierry Henry is really trying to get all their eggs in the basket to try to reinforce as greatly as possible to get out of the relegation zone, because that's the matter at the moment, you know, is to get out of that relegation zone. I would assume mid-table is probably the objective for them at this point, but I think that adding players like Fabregas, getting Naldo as well, I think they're really, really trying to reinforce as big as they can so far. Can they do it? That's going to be hard to tell. We have to see how these two players will edge out for Monaco, but I think this gives them much more momentum and much more confidence now that they could definitely get out of that relegation zone.
And I'm sure two big signings like that for Monaco will give the club a lift, especially with the youngsters that they've got. You know, it's going to be a tricky season for them, obviously, because they've had a dreadful 6 or 7 months. But at the same time, you know, the amount of experience those two players have, if it doesn't rub off on the younger players, then I don't give them a hope in hell.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I think that's really something that Monaco, you know, had been really stressed about using youth. We saw that with Kylian Mbappe. So now I think getting these players who are obviously, you know, have won a lot, you know, who have been experienced all over Europe, I think now that has to bring much more motivation for the entire team to really get out of this really black hole that is the relegation zone in Liga.
That's right. Well, let's turn our attention back to Chelsea, and while Fabregas heads out of the Stamford Bridge door, a new face will arrive in the summer, that being US men's national team starlet Christian Pulisic. Now, the $73 million deal has broken the transfer record involving an American footballer. Now, gents, I know you guys are very big Pulisic fans. You know more about him than I do. How much pressure is a lad under to deliver?
I'll go. A lot of pressure. I think it's always been the stereotype that unfortunately that we get, and this is without any due respect to Christian Pulisic, because he is a fantastic player, a player that is completely different than all the other players that we have currently in the system on the national team. For him, for some American fans, not a lot, but there are some who unfortunately are not willing to understand the fact that, you know, you're not going to, that they cannot place the entire pressure of an entire nation just because they didn't fail to make the World Cup on a 20-year-old. Looking at this move real quick, okay, so I'll start with the marketing standpoint. Marketing, this is a success. I think that when you look at a player like Pulisic, who is obviously the most recognizable American in the world at the moment, you know, has been sensational, at least from an American's perspective, because of his performances in the Bundesliga for Borussia Dortmund, now going to the Premier League, which, you know, is perhaps the most popular English-speaking league outside of Liga MX, obviously. He goes in there, goes to a top team like Chelsea, you know, one of the biggest teams in the world and probably the most recognizable teams, at least in the United States. This is a move that I think is going to be huge for the rise in the stock and the popularity of Chelsea, the Premier League, Pulisic, U.S. soccer as a whole, if he does succeed. Now, that's where my skepticism comes in. Because, you know, I think this move, and I hope that he does succeed. You know, the price tag is obviously the biggest questionable thing on my mind, is the fact that I don't think he's worth that much. I still think that Borussia Dortmund are the real winners in this one. But what I will say is that I think going to this team brings him a fresh start. You look at what he was doing at Dortmund so far, you know, consistently essentially being a rotational player on the bench because of the performances that Jadon Sancho has been doing on that right wing, you know, with Royce, with Paulo Cacer, and those type of players. You know, with Pulisic, you don't see that. You didn't see that this season under Lucien Favre. So it's going to be really interesting to see what happens now for this player. But I think when you look at the youth that Pulisic has, when you're comparing the players in the position like William, like Pedro, who are on the bad stretch of 30 at the moment, this brings some youth to the team, some experience, a breath of fresh air. I think with a coach like Mauricio Sarri, who, you know, and Joe, you could obviously repeat, I could repeat the statements that he said when the announcement was made, that when you look at Pulisic and the position that he's in, yes, perhaps the player that he is, maybe it's not the style of league that he wants to perform. I think that if he went to a La Liga, I think he would have been much more successful there. We don't know what he will do at Chelsea, mind you. But I think that with Mauricio Sarri, being a manager who has indeed, you know, gotten success out of improving wingers. We saw that at Napoli with Lorenzo Insigne and Jose Callejon. I think with Pulisic, he's in the perfect moment because he's still a player in development, mind you. He's only 20 years old. He's not the finished product of other players that are much older than him. So he could still be groomed into that top player. And I have confidence in Sarri in this one, that he does succeed heading into the new season. But I still think VVD are the real winners in here. The fact that they're getting essentially I don't want to say chump change, but the fact that they got that much for a player who is essentially a non-starter this season is incredible. The fact that they have that money in reserve, they're having the youth players like Jadon Sancho, the fact that they could probably get Thorgan Hazard to replace him, probably a significantly lower price. I think Borussia Dortmund are laughing at the bank at this one. But, of course, and Joe will repeat the statements of what I've just said, I think that we are absolutely hopeful that he does succeed. The one thing that we both had in mind is that, you know, that the pressure hopefully isn't too much for him and that he does succeed in the position that Sarri wants him to play. That's how I feel, obviously.
Joe?
Yeah. Is it ever possible that you could have a deal where everybody won? Let's look at it from multiple angles here. Let's start at Bevabe with Dortmund. They're going to bring in all this money for a player who was really on their bench. If you think about it, you know, like Rob said, Jadon Sancho has somewhat replaced him in the lineup. He was getting time. He's playing Champions League at 20 years old. We can actually call him experienced. But he wasn't worth the price tag that they paid for him. So Dortmund refills the coffers, and they've done it time and time again. They've done it so smartly with Ousmane Dembele. They've done it with Robert Lewandowski. They've done it with Mats Hummels. Now you see them do this with Pulisic, where they bring in more money than you would have expected them to bring in for a particular player. So, and then, like Rob said, the ability to use that money, turn it around for Thorgan Hazard, who's really going to help that team move forward, is a huge win for Dortmund. Let's look at Chelsea's standpoint. Chelsea brings in a 20-year-old experienced winger with a great work ethic, a definite, you know, a fantastic motor, very good foot skills, and somebody where they really have, if you think about it, they kind of have a need at this point. Willian is on the northern side of 30, and I think at this point they're not getting the goal production they want. And I think Pulisic, although a similar player, brings a different dimension to what Willian does. So I think there's an improvement at that position. You look at Pulisic's point of view on this one. You get to go to Maurizio Sarri, who Rob just said, great success with Jose Callejon, great success with Lorenzo Insigne. The guy knows how to coach wingers. Look at what Eden Hazard is doing on the left side for Chelsea right now. He's scored 10 goals so far in the season. And Pulisic, not this year, but next season, is going to be a wonderful accent on the other side as long as Chelsea keeps Eden Hazard, which I think there is potential for them to do that. So you see a brightening of Chelsea's attack, and you see a piece that where Sarri, you've got to remember, Sarri is a manager that does not like to rotate players. He's got about 12, 13, 14 players tops, no matter how deep the bench can be 100 players. He's got 14 players. That's who he plays, and that's it. So, you know, that wear and tear on Willian's legs over the course of the Premier League season, like we've said before, international competition, FA Cup, Carabao Cup, there's so many competitions that it wears on an older player naturally. I think the only older player we've ever seen it not wear on is Cristiano Ronaldo at this point. But Willian moves out, Pulisic moves in, 10 years younger, and I think gives Sarri a piece that he will consider reliable. Let's talk about the comments that they picked up in the post game. I believe it was yesterday, where Sarri said he didn't know about the move until yesterday. And many people were making a big deal about Sarri's lack of knowledge of this move, almost suggesting that he didn't endorse the move. He indicated that he was asked about Pulisic about a month ago. He indicated that he was positive about the player. A couple of things. I think one thing is lost in translation. I think if you go and ask Maurizio Sarri that question in Italian, I think he gives you his realistic answer, not his interpretive answer. I also think that, Sarri likes wingers, so I think that's kind of where he'll be going with this. It's a player that he wants. He likes to not focus on the transfer window. He likes to not focus on the external things that happen at a football club. He wants to focus on what's going on the pitch. He's a little bit of a tinkerer himself, and he wants to remain focused there. So if the front office is going to make a team decision. They'll ask him his opinion. He gave his opinion on Pulisic, and the team executed. So I think in the end, I think his comments were a little taken out of context, and I think that he, in the end, endorsed this move, and I think he wanted this player.
No, oh, I agree, mate. And to be honest, I think when it comes to the Pulisic transfer, it just shows that Chelsea are still trying to push that average age lower. We saw Aritha Balaga coming in the summer. They signed players like Christensen, who's fairly young. You've got Kovacic that's coming on loan. He's 24 years old. Ruben Loftus-Cheek has been promoted to the first team squad. He had a fantastic season with Crystal Palace. Ross Barkley is 25. And as you mentioned before, Willian is in his 30s now. Pedro is in his 30s. You know, Giroud, Hazard is 27, 28. So I think bringing Pulisic is another sign that Chelsea are trying to promote youngsters but do it their own way. That being said, I know that Chelsea are probably the most popular London club in the United States. So it makes perfect marketing and branding sense to sign the starlet of the US men's national team. It makes perfect sense. And, you know, as you said before, Joe, everyone is a winner in this one.
Yeah, and you know, the one thing I would hope at this point is that Greg Berhalter, the newly appointed coach of the men's national team, takes a different approach. The last few coaches we've seen with the U.S. men's national team have tried to make Pulisic more of a central player, a central attacking midfielder, and he's not that person. I think they really need to focus on Christian Pulisic, the winger, the right winger. Have him play up and down the line with DeAndre Yedlin on that side, the Newcastle defender, and I think you're going to get much better production out of him. I think you look at the players that are going to Germany or in Germany now, and Tyler Adams and Weston McKennie, those are your central midfielders. I think those are the ones you want to build around in the future. But I think when you take Pulisic, I think you need to make sure you move him on the right side where he's comfortable and where he does the most damage and causes the most trouble for other teams.
Absolutely. Well, there's something I wanted to ask you guys, actually. What do you know about the petition Crossfire Premier have submitted to FIFA regarding solidarity payments?
I you know, I've been reading up about this today. Chris Hennage wrote an article in The Guardian about this today, and it just amazes me. So what has happened is MLS or United States Soccer has not signed up with the ability to recoup that solidarity payment. So if you take a youngster, I believe the ages are from 14 to 23 years old, and you develop that player and the player is sold on, you get money from that. So the club that Christian Pulisic was a part of in Pennsylvania stands to lose anywhere over $500,000 to $1 million in solidarity payments because of this. Now, what that translates into is the ability to coach and to work with and develop around the number I've seen is around 500 kids that you could take and develop. I think the inability to recoup a lot of that money, and right now there's still a lawsuit out there for DeAndre Yedlin and his club to recoup some of that money from Washington, D.C. There's a club in D.C. that's sued for that money. The ability to recoup that money is enormous because in the United States, we have, and I think Rob will agree with me, we have a serious development issue in this country. And the problem is, in this country, it is pay to play. Kids that move on, that are developed to those levels, their parents, their families pay ridiculous sums of money. We even talk about Clint Dempsey from Nacogdoches, Texas, who was making 2 and 3 hour journeys to and from practice. The sacrifices that the families have made financially, time-wise, there's huge, huge sacrifices. And the problem is that we don't have a good system to incorporate all kids. I think systems in Brazil are better. I think systems in Argentina are better. Certainly systems in Europe are much, much better at identifying and developing these kids. And the kids in the United States, it's really become a sport of the rich, where in South American countries, it's truly a sport of the poor. And I think this country needs to sign up with those solidarity payments, get that money recouped for these players that they develop so that they can turn it into more players. And I think if that ever happens, you will see soccer rise to some of the elite levels that this country seems to hope to try to get to, but for some reason can't find the roadmap to that success.
Cheers, Joe. Cheers, Joe. Right, well, we're still on the subject of transfers, and rumour has it Gabriel Barbosa could be moving to the Premier League on loan, with Fulham, Everton and West Ham all interested, which would come as a bit of a surprise given his poor showing in Europe. That being said, Rob, Gabigol rediscovered his best form at Santos in 2018. Would the Premier League be a step too far for him?
I don't think so. I think that he already is able to show that potential. I think what we were robbed of at the moment is that we did not see the best of him at Inter or at Benfica. You know, currently he's still at Inter. He's still property of Inter. The loan move to Santos was the property of Inter. So I think at the moment, I think we see the potential of a player like him. I think going into a Premier League side that hopefully, you know, can get the best out of him. You know, he's a really big figure, you know, really strong, loves to go forward and beat off the defenders. I think going to the Premier League would not be a step off. I think obviously the issue, I think at the moment so far, is the work permit. But I think that it's the best case scenario at this point, because I think at Inter he's not going to get those chances that he, you know, was supposed to get earlier on. You look at Mauro Icardi being the undisputed striker over there, the captain of the team. You look at Lautaro Martinez, who did score that winner against Napoli a couple of days ago. He certainly is a diamond that is certainly ready to be flourished into a major star for Argentina and for Inter. So he is, his position as a super sub and Cardi's understudy is still there, and that leaves Barbosa at third fiddle. So what do you do there? I think that the Premier League would definitely be a way to rejuvenate himself. Obviously, he's only 22 years old. He's turning 23 this year. So I think a move for him would be sensational. There had been rumors that he would probably stay in Brazil, either at Santos or at Flamengo, given the fact that they have competitions like the Libertadores and the Brasileirão to fight for. But I think if he does end up in the Premier League, I still think that he would succeed. It's just being there at the right moment. I think the momentum and the motivation that he got at Santos this last season could really help him, you know, secure that move in the Premier League and hopefully get better performances than he used to get at Inter and Benfica.
Well, interesting times ahead, because he was banging in the goals before he went to Inter, so let's just hope he can replicate that form, but not against United, obviously. There you go. Right, gents, let's wrap the show up with one more transfer rumour, and that's Pablo Perez could be on his way to MLS. He's 33. Question to both of you guys: does MLS need another 30-something, or is he too good a player to turn down?
The former.
Okay, go on.
I just think that, yes, he has been a good player for Boca, but I just don't think that's something that MLS needs to follow. You know, one of the rumors that he was supposed to go to San Jose Earthquakes to be with the new manager, Matias Almeida, who was a coach at Chivas. I just don't think that, you know, because of the model MLS has been following. You look at teams like Atlanta, who won the MLS Cup using a bunch of Latino youngsters, you know, well, not youngsters, but, you know, at the right age, like Martinez, Almiron, those, Tito Villalba. You look at teams like NYCFC with their youth. You look at teams like LAFC. You know, you can even admit that, you know, the Galaxy were a victim of this because of the reliance on a 37-year-old Zlatan Ibrahimovic. But you look at other teams that have been using youth to rejuvenate themselves to really, you know, become something serious. I just don't think that getting a player like Perez, who, you know, is a good talent, perhaps kind of a late bloomer, as we've seen what we saw at Boca. But I just don't think that the move in MLS is going to, you know, help, I guess, the popularity of the team that gets him. I just don't think that, and this is without any disrespect to him, but I think now heading into the new year and, of course, the end of the decade, I think MLS needs to and is going to and is succeeding in getting youth. We just saw a PT Martinez, Gonzalo Martinez, the player from River Plate. He just won the Libertadores. He just won South American Football of the Year. You know, and you would think that if you're the best player in the entire continent, that a move to Europe is your next stop. No, he's going to go straight to MLS. And that just shows how serious this league is trying to be and how serious these players are trying to get that, you know, the mighty dollar in the end. But, you know, to use MLS as a springboard. We're seeing that with players like Almiron, who's going to head to Europe eventually. You look at other players that have been developing well. From an American standpoint, you look at Tyler Adams, who got that move to Leipzig. You know, you look at Zach Seferin from Columbus Crew, who's going to get that move to Manchester City at the goalkeeper. So I think it's just that the model that MLS is facing at the moment, they're using youth. That's the thing. I think that's their major focus. And they cannot rely on 30-something-old players who, you know, let's be honest, are not going to make the league much more popular than what these 20-something odd players, 20-something-year-old players are doing.
What do you think, Joe?
I couldn't agree more. You know, we look at MLS was really starting to build that roadmap to becoming Portugal, to becoming the Dutch league, where they were bringing in that young talent, developing it, selling it off for a profit. Miguel Almiron is an example of that. Rob, a name you didn't mention, Ezequiel Barco, who is now another player that they've brought in, young player, good player, who chose to come here first. And then you hear about the Perez move, and you're like, you can't be serious. We look at, of all the good moves, of all the Almirons and all the Barcos and all the PT Martinez's that we've brought in to build that roadmap to going to that youth movement, to going to that development movement, to really establish themselves as a not necessarily a development league, but I would say a second tier league that could compete on the higher levels with good talent that they recognize and then be a profitable league as well. They're turning themselves back into what everyone looks at them as a retirement league. Wayne Rooney, Zlatan Ibrahimovic, Steven Gerrard, Frank Lampard, Andrea Pirlo. The names are
Villa,
huge names.
Villa.
Kaká, David Villa. They're all huge names in world football, and they're all well past their primes by the time they show up here. And you hope that they don't do it. Another rumor that we didn't talk about, in addition to Pablo Perez, is his teammate, Carlito Tevez, is also rumored to be coming here to join Guillermo Barros-Skelotto over at the LA Galaxy. And could you imagine a duo of 35-year-old-plus strikers in Ibrahimovic and Carlos Tevez? Would have been wonderful at Milan 10 years ago. But but today, I don't know that it's what people want to see.
So it's a resounding thumbs down from both of you.
Yep.
There we go. Wonderful. Well, that's the end of our show, ladies and gents. Joe, Rob, thank you ever so much for agreeing to come on the show. It's been an absolute pleasure having you both on. You know, we've spoken at great length off air in the past, and you know, having you guys back on the show is a breath of fresh air, and I'd like to thank you ever so much for your time. Before I let you guys go, Twitter handles and a bit of promotion for the podcast.
Sure, Rob, you go first.
No, Joe, you go first.
Right. So my Twitter handle is at JP Usello. The handle for the show is at Low Limit Football. And we come back on Monday night live at 7 p.m. Eastern time. I believe that is 1 a.m. for you. No, I'm sorry. It's midnight still for you, where we come back to start off 2019 with our special guest, Alex Goldberg, who's the host and producer of the Calcio Land podcast, along with David Amoyal. Big, big Chelsea fan. If you follow him on Twitter, he's always posting wonderful videos about his opinions on Chelsea. Obviously, we're going to talk Christian Pulisic. We're gonna talk about Chelsea, Maurizio Sarri, and Lord knows what else. So that's what we've got coming up on Monday. Rob, you, sir.
My Twitter handle is RobertoRojas97. Obviously, we also have a big month in January. You know, you can follow me for everything happening in the world of football. But obviously, heading into 2019, I think for this month, aside of all the Champions League stuff, the European stuff, the rumors as well, as we're getting into the swing of the silly season, we also have a few South American news to talk about. We have the Youth Championship, the U20 Championship to talk about. I'll definitely be doing some coverage there. And we also have the Copa America draw happening in about exactly 3 weeks. You know, they have announced the seeding of the pots, that the tournament will happen in Brazil in June. So definitely, you know, for anyone that's interested in South American football or you know, just soccer in general, or for me to, you know, have an interest of music. I always like to post my now playing music whenever I want. But yeah, just follow me. And yeah, we Joe, I can repeat what we said at the top of the show. We have really big plans for this year. We're going to try something different that I think other podcasts are not able to do because of some situations. But I think we're going to try and to go into a different avenue that I think hopefully the audience will enjoy. And again, still, thank you so much for inviting myself and for inviting Joe as well. We, you know, it's been a pleasure. We're obviously good friends of you, and we're thankful for the opportunity that, you know, that you give both of us. And of course, you know, we've been on the show individually. We've had you on, and just that cold mutual feeling and understanding of a good friendship at this point, not just connections or being, you know, colleagues. I think just that friendship has been so good, and hopefully that in 2019, all three of us will achieve what we want.
Fingers crossed. As I say, it's a love thing. Well, guys, thank you again for joining me. It's been an absolute pleasure, and I wish you guys all the best for 2019. It's going to be a big year for you. It's a big year for us. I'm slurring my words at the moment. I don't even drink. do you know what? If I take a couple of weeks off like you guys, maybe my batteries will be recharged. I haven't had a break from podcasting since summer 2017. So, yeah, I think I might need a bit of sleep, to be fair. Like hibernation, like a bear or something. I don't know. Right. For those of you still listening, we have a Twitter handle. It's at Shoot the Defence. We have a Facebook group page. Please feel free to join us. If you're into betting tips or if you want a bit of a flutter, we've got stealthsecretsource.co.uk. You can get your betting tips there. And a quick shout out to all of the podcasts on the FNX network. You've got the One Up Front podcast, you've got D&D Footy Factory, you've got Talking Balls, Footy Says, Sofa Sports News, Chronicles of Aguna, Bros Talking Soccer. My goodness, there's a whole load of content on that site. So visit fnx.network. And guys, until next time, adios.